let's have an AA meeting. My name is Lindsay, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language, from their own point of view, the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker and will believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, I must have this thing. This speaker I've known the entire time, the whole time I've been in the program, for sure. I had about 3 months when she came in, and I remember the day she came in, and I'm so proud of how much she's grown in the last year, or a little bit over a year. How she continues to be present and persistent and continues to do the things that she needs to do to keep her sobriety. So without further ado, I'd love to hear what Alex has to share with us. So y'all give her a hand.
I'm Alex. I'm an alcoholic. So my home group is Log Cabin Group. Yes, I see a few of y'all here tonight. I've never done this. I'm incredibly nervous, so this is going to be a wild ride for everybody. my sobriety date is December 28th, 2021, so I've just got about 15 months, right around there. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I'm not from Atlanta. I'm from Maine. I was born in Maine, lived there for about the first 7 years of my life, and my mom, my sister, and my dad is pretty normal up there for the most part. It was a beach community, very safe. Most of my life was actually pretty normal, and I think sometime in my teens I realized I'm making things way more complicated than they need to be. But that's not to say that things didn't happen. I remember for most of my childhood being very lost and confused. I don't want to go into details about any of the things that did actually happen to me because those details don't matter, but I definitely had some trauma as a child growing up that I never really knew how to process. Family divorced, you know, that as that does, it happens. But, you know, moving a lot, I never really established a sense of stability for myself or coping with things. I just sort of was able to get up and move on to the next thing. But, I think when I think about, like, having gone through the steps with any of the numerous sponsors I've had, I've had a few, if y'all know me, I realized that addict behavior was not just when I started drinking. Alcoholic behavior was not just when I started drinking. I remember I was like 4 or 5 years old. I stole a piece of caramel and I hid it in my mom's purse at a beach store. That was probably the first thing I remember doing as a child. Lied a lot. Really when things started kicking up for me was moving to Georgia, I would say. Georgia has never really been a good spot for me, good landing spot, not really a good safe space, not really anywhere where I sought to better myself. I've been back and forth between Maine and Georgia more times than I can tell you. I've probably moved about every single year of my life. Still not used to it at 33 years old, but getting to Georgia, I just sort of gave up on things. I, you know, did real well in school at first. My mom's here tonight. Having gone through this, I resented my mom for a very long time. Blamed her for just about everything. Blamed anybody I could but myself. But having gone through some of this, I cannot imagine I would have done things any differently in that situation. Looking at my situation with my son, the amount of changes that I put him through, it's just something that sort of happens. But after so many changes, I just kind of stopped caring about things. Got pretty complacent, stopped participating in school, stopped participating socially, stopped taking care of myself, which maybe seems like a weird thing for a child, but I just didn't. Cannot tell you how many states I've lived in up and down the East Coast either. Most of that is just moving on my own. But my first experience with alcohol, I was in eighth grade. It was at recess. My friend brought in a Pepsi bottle filled with all kinds of stuff, and I was suspended for 10 days for drinking at recess. And, of course, at the time, it wasn't, you know, maybe I shouldn't do this. Maybe I shouldn't try to get drunk at recess. It was, I'll just have to be better next time. Progressed to some outside issues. Of course, I feel like, as it, you know, probably does for anybody at a young age. Remember smoking joints with my friend and finding a shoebox full of them in her dad's. And it was never, maybe I'm sick because I'm too young and I shouldn't be doing this. Let me find something else. It was always, what else can I find? When I did feel things, I felt them very intensely. Sylvia Plath has a quote, I feel everything very intensely. Even when I feel nothing, I feel it absolutely. And that is something I resonate so deeply with. I can make something out of anything. Anything. I'm real good at that. And that just never really stopped. My mom worked so much, went through so much, so, you know, between being a disc jockey, working nights, super early mornings, being with us, two jobs most of the time. I think it was Log Cabin I first heard the phrase, latchkey kid. I never knew what that was. I looked it up. I'd say on Google, and, you know, that's kind of how it was for my sister and I. Didn't have the best relationship growing up with her either, but, you know, even in between all the arguing, we looked out for each other, you know. But after all of that, I think it was, God, what year was it? I really started drinking probably in, like, 2003. Had a friend with huge property, ton of house parties, and that was the first time that I had ever had my drink drugged. And I didn't get it then either, you know. I don't know what happened, which is great, but I didn't think about it then either. I didn't see a problem with waking up on somebody's, like, cigarette ash-covered floor and not showering for 3 days and going home to my mom and just going to sleep and not saying anything. And that those were the kinds of people I surrounded myself with. I didn't want to surround myself with people who were ambitious and driven, because that made me feel very small and, like, I don't know, not only is that work that I'm really don't have the energy to put in, but I didn't feel good about myself seeing these people going far with their life, because I remember when I was a kid, I was doing okay, like, up till maybe third, fourth grade. I think fourth grade I had honors, and that was it. That was the last year that I did well academically. Surrounded myself with a lot of people that enabled that sort of behavior. Talking about character defects, I really perfected those in middle school and high school. I was kind of a bully in school. I was really mean to people. I was really mean. Men and women. It wasn't exclusive to anybody. It was just anybody. I really didn't care for anyone. And I'm still working on that. I think the longest I ever lived anywhere was probably like 3 years. You know, middle school, I spent sixth grade in Snellville, and then went back to Maine for 3 years, seventh, eighth, ninth grade, 3 years. Came back to Georgia and did 3 years of 10th grade. Going back to never really doing well in Georgia, it seemed that every time I went to Maine, I don't know if it's because there was less going on. I really only had myself to sit with. living in Maine, those were really the times that I tried to work on myself and actually grow, not just develop an exterior personality for other people to see, you know, guys. In Maine, I tried to look into a lot of different theisms, you know. I looked at different religions, and I thought that religion would be what helped me. Because at a certain point, I think 13, I started going to therapy. It became about mental illness, and I thought mental illness was my problem, you know. All sorts of diagnoses, depression, generalized anxiety, bipolar type schizoaffective, borderline personality disorder, bipolar 2, ADHD, manic depression, and I've been on just about every psych med that you can think of. So I thought religion would be it. If I could just find a new way to look at life, you know, and it's funny because especially at Log Cabin, we always talk about it's just a change in perspective. AA is just a change in perspective. And I've been seeking that, not even realizing that that's what I needed and wanted, just kind of aimlessly grasping at whatever felt good. So, you know, for a while, that worked. Learning things, diving into hobbies and interests. Art used to be the only thing I really wanted to do. I would fall asleep with sketchbooks in my lap. I would draw all night long. But it was usually about, like, how depressed and forlorn and, like, sad I was. But it was still something, and I felt good about it. Eventually, that stopped. That friend I had in high school with the huge property partying at Tori's house, that's really all I wanted to do. It was exciting. It was exciting being social because I'm not a very social person. I think ambivert is the word, but I'm mostly introverted except for when I'm comfortable around people, and then I'm a little annoying. But I'm okay with that. My sponsor's here. She's stuck with me 8 hours a day, talking to her all day. I get pretty annoying. I'm okay with that. At a certain point, I really just kind of abandoned all the things that meant something to me. Art and writing, I used to journal constantly. Very into music, always really interested in finding new things. And it's a little bit different now. Right now, I just sort of stick to the things that I'm comfortable with that are familiar and predictable. And everything has a season, so I'm okay with that. I don't think things really started picking up as far as my alcoholism and the alcoholic way in which I indulged other things until I was probably like 17. How do I put this? Spent a lot of time ignoring everything in life, absolutely everything going on with whatever kind of chemical I could find. It truly didn't matter what it was. I really stopped valuing my own life. Self-harm is a huge part of my story. I don't really want to get into it because I know that it can trigger people, but trying to find a way to not do that. What else can I do? How else can I numb this? How else can I stop thinking? You think constantly. You have anxiety or panic disorder. You get nervous or you're just over-analytical. It's hard not to indulge those thoughts and think that they are useful and helpful, and that's what I did. I thought that my overthinking was my gut trying to warn me. It was different intuitions, and someone's telling me something. No one was telling me anything. It was a lot of chemical reactions completely messing with me. In 2011, prescriptions were a huge part of my story, you know, and if it wasn't me doing prescriptions and drinking, it was me drinking and seeking prescriptions, and they were super available to me at the time, and that really just kind of solidified that alcohol or anything was going to be my solution. It was obsessive thoughts. Like, whatever I would be drinking, I would, you know, little bottle, a couple little bottles, and that's it, because I'm going to be drunk at this point, so I'm obviously not going to go out and get, you know, we're going to the store and we're getting more. Wake up with regret, did not matter. Drink more to get over that. Find somebody to distract me or validate me. Get over it. For as much therapy as I've been in, I never really spent a lot of time accessing how I felt, what it was that I was feeling, because it's never just surface issues. It's deeper needs that are threatened. I firmly believe that. You know, 10-step inventory stuff, you know. I didn't look at any of that. I didn't want to look at it. It was uncomfortable. I felt really kind of dumb most of my life. Like, I had no idea what was going on. Like, I was just sort of mirroring the behaviors of others, trying to seem normal. And I never felt normal. Not once. And that's a hard thing to go through. And, you know, moving every year, desperately trying to find people to be close with, someone to connect with, somebody to bond with, and then leaving. It's incredibly hard. Even though I was the one leaving, I felt a great sense of abandonment and, you know, obviously loss. In the position of my parents, I completely understand why they would let us move when we wanted to move. You do what your kid wants to do because you want what's best for them. I had no idea what I wanted. I can look back on all these things and be grateful that they happened, though. So, 2012, I was arrested for the first and only time for battery and simple battery, which I got expunged. I didn't hit anybody. I didn't touch anybody. I threw a cup. Through a McDonald's cup. I think that's when I started realizing that this is not a solution. And while that realization was enough to get it going, it wasn't enough to plant my feet in recovery. Went through so many withdrawals at home with my baby, my mom handing me my baby in bed. I remember I was watching some MTV special on the 90s, and some song came on. I friggin' lost it, holding my infant in bed, sweating and chills, and my legs are restless, and I haven't slept, and the sun is so bright, and there's no curtains on the window. In my mom's guest room. I don't even think I was living there at the time. I don't know, maybe I was, but I didn't want to do that. The amount, you know, I had my son in 2015. His dad and I met through my sister. We dated for 3 months, drinking every day, and then decided, let's have a baby. I think I slept in my room because we were going to be roommates. I slept in my room for one day. Had my son in 2015. Being a mother is incredibly fulfilling. It keeps me going. But I had him for the first 4 years. He's going on 9 now. I went through all that with him, too. And, you know, I thought that my alcoholic tendencies and what I indulged in would make me better. And sometimes it did make me better. It gave me more energy. It gave me more patience. It made me more fun. I jumped around. I went and played out in the yard with him. And then other days, I just snapped on him. Every day. Lost my cool on my toddler for being a toddler. It was about 2017 when I realized I couldn't keep putting him through this anymore. I was a dental assistant for a while, went to school, just certificate courses for chairside dental assisting, and I did that, and it was really great, and it was fun, and I loved setting up the instruments. It made me happy. They're all straight and neat. I loved it. I kept losing my jobs, though. I got fired from every dental job I had over maybe the 5 years that I did it. I stole Valiums from cabinets, huffed nitrous in between patients that got nitrous. But nobody knew, right? They knew. Last job I had was in Flowery Branch. It was a really great office. It was very small. There was only 3 operatories, and the doctor I worked for was very much a family-oriented person. And despite having to miss so many days in every office, having to get my son from daycare, he had reactive airway disease, so he was constantly getting fevers. He was constantly coming down with something, I'd have to leave work. But this time, this last office I worked at, I got fired. Not drinking, not smoking weed, not doing anything. It was just me. And I remember on the drive home, I was like, shit, it's just me. Like, I have nothing else to blame. Lost that job. Laid in bed, feeling sorry for myself for a little while. I lived in Lawrenceville with a friend of a friend, some guys, whatever. I had my own room. And another friend of a friend invited a group of us down to the Florida Keys. It would be fun, because who doesn't love the Florida Keys, right? I was the only one that could go. So I went. That was not a great time. Had to call the human trafficking hotline to get out of the Florida Keys. Had to hide on several islands, hide my car, duck behind dumpsters. And it's probably the one thing, like, you know, my childhood thing with my babysitter, I can get over that. You know, the physical abuse, the scars on my body from her, the sexual abuse I went through as a child. I can get over that, you know. I think for the most part, for me, it's easy to come from a place of understanding when someone is not well. I understand that. I understand what that means. And even though those things sucked, I didn't think I was going to die going through them. Not like this. I did not think I would get back. It was a 3-hour drive. I think it was the Tampa airport itself. I'm not sure. 3-hour drive. I spent an hour and a half on the phone with the human trafficking hotline, setting everything up. I had to show a note at the airport, and they wheeled me in a wheelchair through the airport. If I hadn't called them, I wouldn't have been able to get access to my ticket, because he definitely called to cancel it. And it was over after that. That was August, July 2019, July 25th, 2019 is when I came home. And then August 5th, I was diagnosed with complex PTSD. And I don't think much of the pharmaceutical industry or therapists or the process in which they diagnose people, but that is one that I'm okay with. I understand that. I see that. And I see how that can look like a lot of other diagnoses. But I have symptoms. I have symptoms. Shortly after that, I lost physical custody of Silas, my son. I was kicked out of the house I was living in, and I started living in my car. And I remember sitting in the cul-de-sac of a house I used to smoke meth at on the phone with my mom, high as hell, begging to come home. If I sound calm, then maybe she'll let me. She didn't. And I felt really unloved about that at the time. I felt abandoned. I don't really feel that way. I don't feel that way anymore. I needed that. Everybody's rock bottom is different. I've had a couple rock bottoms, but living in my car for that time in Barrow County, Georgia, was my physical rock bottom. Much heavier outside issues at that time. Gas station coffee cups filled with vodka, you know. Sleeping in parking lots, I remember. My stepdad writing up a note for me to put in my phone if I were ever questioned by the police that I had permission to sleep there. I didn't sleep very much, though. I was mostly just in my car or in the woods. A lot of that time, I did what I had to do to get by. Quid pro quo, I got what I needed. It was not sustainable. It was September 10th, 2019. I decided I was going to kill myself. I was ready. I got double what I would normally get. And I was going to go hang myself in the woods at the state park. And I ended up passing out by the bathroom. And they all found me, and they dragged me off. And, you know, in that moment, I was like, okay, maybe people do care. Am I allowed to swear? Okay. One of the older guys were sitting there, and I got myself together. I got dressed. I cleaned my face up, and he looked at me and he said, "You look like you've been getting fucked all night." I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go. Okay. Took my car and I left. One of the guys came with me, and true Alex fashion, I did not want to be around that person, so I started an argument with him to get him to leave. And he did. So I left Fort Yargo. I went to McDonald's. I'm nodding out at McDonald's. I'm like, I can't do this here. I got to go back to Fort Yargo because it's nicer. But I never slept at Fort Yargo during the day. I would sleep at McDonald's during the day or at the car wash during the day. I would sleep at Fort Yargo at night. I would take a shower. I would park where the campers park, and I would sleep. I put my sheets up, and I'd sleep. And I ended up wrecking my car. I timed it. It's 50 seconds from McDonald's to the tree that I wrecked at. And funnily enough, that property is where I used to buy weed at. That really changed my life. My family arranged for me to go to Delaware to an outpatient rehab and to a sober house. That was my first experience with sober living. And I was really excited about it. But it's probably easy to be excited about recovery when someone buys your ticket and covers your first month of rent, and then you get $600 in food stamps that come to you immediately, and somebody drives you to the grocery store, and they drive you to your appointment. It was all handed to me on a silver spoon. So, of course, I was excited about it. But then I stopped being excited about it, and I relapsed. About 11 months later, I came home, kind of dicked around again for a year or two. And I had the brilliant idea of building out a van into a camper. That, you know, it was a sustainable idea to live in a van and shit in a bucket for who knows how long. I was going to do it. I had a moment of clarity. I said, I cannot do this. I do not want, I don't want, I don't mind shitting in the bucket. I don't want to dump it out. I just don't. So I called up a friend who was at a sober living down the street, and I came in December 28th. This time, though, I really had to do some work. I had no other options. I had nowhere else to go. I put that work in. I sought a sponsor. I got my big book. This program had curriculum that forced me to get into the big book, which is great. I was super exhausted. I worked at the chicken plant. I hated that. That was awful. I think I worked there for 2 months, and I never worked a full week. Which is also pretty typical Alex behavior. Job, I don't want this job. I'll get another one tomorrow. I interview great. Got into a little bit of recovery work, and then now where I'm at now, definitely more stable. I've been there almost a year. This is the longest I've ever held a job. Program I'm at now, though, really, like, not just the program, but the women in my life. These women that I've met, like Lindsay, other women that are not here, all these sponsors I've had, they've all been great. I've had women tell me the importance of the book. I've, you know, brought my book to meetings. I saw other people doing it. I want to do that. Mirroring people again, because I don't know how to be a person. Really getting into this book, like, studying it. I'm allowed to write notes in it. I write stuff in this thing all the time. The three biggest things that I've gotten out of recovery, like having a higher power of my own understanding, and the of my own understanding part is what was most important to me. I tried church. Church didn't work for me. I can't find God in a church. It's just not me. Praying. I always thought praying was so weird. And then, you know, I'll pray while I'm driving. I'll pray while I'm taking a shower. I'll pray while I'm washing my face. I'll pray while I'm icing a cake. And start praying on my knees, and that was really a game changer. Meditating. Doesn't have to be 15 minutes sitting cross-legged in my... Doesn't have to be that. And then service work. The first commitment I took on in Atlanta was at another group called Tucker Turtles, and I was chairing for a while. Such fulfillment from that, and not even because anything special happened as a result of it, but being involved. Like, for a while, I just came to these meetings, and I just sat here, you know, I just sat in the back where y'all are sitting. Hi. Talk on my cell phone, laugh with who, you know, Stephanie, could not sit with her. I started sitting in the front. I started paying attention. I started opening my book. I started reading from my book. And I actually made an effort. You know, I realized I've, you know, nothing, I don't want to say nothing is changing, nothing is different, but it wasn't where I wanted to be. I didn't want to sit on step 2 for 2 months, 3 months. I wanted to get into the steps. I wanted to do this. I didn't like how I felt. And it stopped being about not being able to drink, and it became more about, I'm sick of me. I'm sick of me. I'm tired of the way that I do things. I'm tired of overreacting. I'm tired of being upset all the time. I needed to get into it. That's probably why I've had so many sponsors. You know, I've had sponsors that wouldn't take me through because I wouldn't medicate myself. I've had sponsors that couldn't meet up. I had sponsors that would have outbursts under their breath during meetings, and it was really embarrassing. Really, that was all that was. Didn't want to sit next to that. My sponsor that took me through the steps, God, I felt so much relief from that. Like, the permission to be honest in a safe space, to be vulnerable in a safe space, to talk about these ugly, horrible things, things that I'm not proud of, and most of the ugly, horrible things are things about me, not even things that happened in my life, not situations that I've been through, but the way that I think, the way that I think about people, the way that I judge people, the way I condemn everything that I don't understand or agree with. And that was really kind of a hard thing to recognize, that I have a ton of pride for no reason at all. Working on that. And I'm going through my steps again now. I'm about to. But the three biggest things for me, finding a higher power. You know, people, I used to hate the cliches. God, like I roll my eyes so hard. But some of them are they're cliches for a reason. Let's sum it up, you know, with a cliche. I remember what one I was about to say. I'm still nervous, guys. Time's almost up. I'm still nervous. I had to get out of myself. And I believed other people believed it, you know. I know that I don't know what I'm doing. I know that my decision-making is terrible. I know that my track record is terrible. And I know that I'm scared of what could happen if I do this again. If I go back out again, I'm truly scared of what I will get myself into. Because, you know, as time goes on, the people that you put yourself around, or at least for me, the people I put myself around, got, like, progressively more dangerous, progressively worse. I believe that everyone else believed it. I believe that everyone else believed in a higher power, and everyone talks about when they came in, everybody's laughing and hugging and smiling, and you know, it's kind of weird, but I wanted that. I wanted that. I wanted to be part of something, and I've never really felt more part of anything than I have with AA or my CA home group. And being of service, I've been, you know, they say to work on whatever defect, you do the opposite of what it is. I'm incredibly selfish and self-centered. I put myself first every time, and my son is a prime example of that. Light of my life was not enough. I put myself first every time. So I started reaching out to people, started calling other alcoholic women, greeting newcomers, women that pick up a white chip, even men that pick up a white chip, whatever. I had to, and it's still something I have to work at every day. You know, I had a sober rock bottom recently. People don't talk about that a whole lot, but that was hard. And some days you really do just have to force yourself to do those things, to read something, reach out to somebody. I'm feeling this. What can I read about it? Hey, how are you? I'm fine, but how are you? Like, let's please talk about you. Chairing meetings, and even trying to fellowship. And, you know, fellowship is not where the recovery is. It is so great to have a strong network of people that you can talk to and relate to and confide in. That wasn't enough. It's not enough. Even when I feel like I've done a lot of work in this, it was still not enough to not do this every day. Now I don't always know what that means to do the next right thing, to do it every day. I don't want to say I've become dependent on her, because I feel like dependent has such like a negative connotation to it, but prayer has become one of my biggest tools, prayer and meditation. Beginning of the day, I'll make my bed, get on my knees, and I'll pray, and I'll ask for guidance and direction. And God, show me what the woman is that you want me to be, what I can do to become that woman, what I can do to help others. And even when I pray for myself, it is for the benefit of others. God, please help me to not be a fucking nightmare today so my coworkers will want to see me tomorrow. Lindsay knows. And listening, paying attention throughout the day, not being on autopilot. There are times when situations arise and, wait a minute, I didn't expect this. I didn't prepare for this. But I listen now. I listen. I take suggestions of others. When I get criticism, I hear it. And I was never really good at that before. Very defensive, very territorial over what I have built up as is me. What is me? What time is it?
I'm worried about the time. Don't worry about
that. But the sponsor that took me through the steps, I had a very close relationship with her, and I think she really showed me what the sponsor-sponsor relationship meant. I looked forward to calling her when good things happened, and I looked forward to calling her when I messed up. Some guidance, you know, big book me, please big book me. Please tell me, suggest to me what to do. Unfortunately, that relationship had to end, but, you know, everything has its season. Even the things that I have in my life right now that I don't particularly care for, I see the purpose in it. You know, these things that I find unacceptable is teaching me something. When I feel like my job is unacceptable or people in my life are unacceptable or I don't understand them, doesn't necessarily mean I have to do something about it. Absolutely, one of the biggest things that I have learned is that I cannot change what anybody else does. It is not about anybody else. Even if I could change what other people do, it's not going to redirect the way that these things affect me or that I internalize them. Because I internalize everything. The overthinking thing, again. I will overthink it into the ground. I'll make myself a victim in any situation. I got to work on that every day. I never really thought that AA would be as big of a part of my life as it is. The first AA meeting I went to, I had my little notebook. I had my little notes and was smiling like, what's up, guys? I think it was Jug Tavern Group was the first meeting I went to in Winder. And I thought that only drinking a little bit after the meeting so I didn't wake up in the middle of the night sweating and shaking meant that I was doing a good job. Maybe at the time, whatever. But the relationships that I've built here, not even just the friendships, but the relationships and the ability to confide in people and observe. I like to observe. I like to see what other people are doing, see how it affects them, what's working for them. It's the mirroring thing, again. It's hard not to mirror what other people do. Giving me some kind of sense of purpose. I was asked to be secretary at my home group, and I still feel like I have imposter syndrome every day. Me? It's not about being at any certain level. It's not about making it. It's not about being at the most meetings. It's not about sitting in the front. Those are things that help me get involved. Sitting up front, and they're reading the steps and the traditions on there. I can read them from there. When I bring my book, I read them from my book, and it gets me in the habit of getting my book. Calling my network, you know, I need to do that. I need to bounce ideas off people. And that gets me comfortable calling my sponsor. Honesty has always been super hard. I'm not really so scared to be honest anymore. When I'm trying to run things, I get scared about it. when I have no intentions. I have no intentions. It's fine. I don't have my watch. What time is it?
It's 8:49.
Okay. That's pretty much it. So the three big things that I've gotten from AA, the ability to find a higher power and actually talk to them on a daily basis. I'm comfortable calling my higher power God. I found God right when I needed to, exactly the way that I needed to. And all the other things along the way to God sort of have strengthened that belief in love that I have in my higher power. Getting out of my head by being of service, doing something for someone, not for me, for no reason at all other than to just show up for people, really helps me judge folks less because I'm very judgmental and intolerant. I'm working on it. And working with other alcoholics. My sponsee Michelle is here, and I love her. Working with her has been so fulfilling. My first sponsee ever. Imposter syndrome again there in the beginning of that. I'm really not good with words. Thank you, guys. That's what I said.
Yay, Alex.
Yay, Alex. Thank you, Alex.
Like a winter rain, I'd run away, hiding the hurt with a drink or an angry word, until the day I could not deny the healing calling from deep inside. It was a love that was here to mend. My broken heart could be my friend. On the other side, I will rise above a mountain here to climb. As I grow, I stumble and I fall, but I am grateful for it all. On the other side, there is peace beneath the pain. A tender tear that I can't explain, washing away the fearful wounds, bearing a light for my life to bloom. On the other side, I will rise above a mountain I must climb. As I grow, I stumble and I fall, I am grateful for it all. On the other side, on the other side, I live my dreams, finding joy, free. I grow, I stumble and I fall, but I am grateful for it all. On the other side, on the other things.